see we're having a good time visiting. My name is Juana Ventura, and I will be your worship associate this morning. No mic. Thomas just said there's no mic. I hear Mike.
I think there is. Yeah, we're good.
Shall I whistle?
No.
Chikiwawa. Does anybody know who that reference to? Chikiwawa. Good morning. My name is Juana Ventura, and I will be your worship associate this morning. Before we begin our service, I invite you to view the highlighted announcements on the screen. We have a, is it up there? The UU Hike, Grief and Caregivers Group, Self-Defense for Teens, and our Circle Suppers. Also, we have Love Shakespeare, a musical review, March 15th through the 23rd. Next week, we will be selling tickets here, so look out for it. Save some time, save the date. And Judy Hertz will have, there will be no chimes practice today. She's out. All right. And Linda Wolf also will be having Foreign Foods Friday. Linda, can you stand up? And do you want to come up or do you want to just talk from there?
Let everyone know. I'll be in the back if you want to sign up for Foreign Foods Friday. We're restarting it. I think some people have gone before. If you just sign up and give me your email so we can get started again for March, which is the last Friday of every month. We'll have a beautiful restaurant picked out.
Great. Thank you.
The Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Fullerton. I am the Reverend Jason Cook, and it's a delight to see all of you this morning. If you are new to our community, indeed, we are very, very glad that you have found us. We have a welcome table in our social hall that you can visit after the service. It's right there. It usually has a blue tablecloth on it, but the cloth isn't on it yet. But you can visit that table and ask questions, sign up for our upcoming New to UU lunch, and get connected with people here in the community. All of our events are open to anyone who would like to participate, and you can read about them on the yellow sheets that you see on the chairs there. You really do have to read our emails and our announcement sheets to know everything that's going on. We only mention a very few number of things that are happening with this community. But in that spirit of hospitality and welcome, I now invite you to find somebody around you you don't know very well and say hello and your name and all that good stuff.
Thank you.
just a chatty group this morning. We're very chatty, and I love that. Maybe we'll just do this one whole service. It'll just be a big conversation. So this morning we continue the series of services that we've been working on this year, and this is our fourth, I believe, Voices in Unitarian Universalism. We are a multi-faith tradition. We come from multiple faiths and identities, and we continue to embrace that as we become part of a UU community. And so we've been taking a service to explore different identities, one each, and today it is Buddhist identities. And so I think we have some really wonderful voices that we will be sharing with you this morning. And to get us going, we need our hearts in a holy place. So I invite you to rise in body or spirit for 1008 when our heart is in a holy place.
To worship is attributed to Shantideva, an 8th century Indian Buddhist monk. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector of those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. For as long as space endures, and for as long as living beings remain, until then may I too abide to dispel the misery of the world. Let us begin our time of fellowship and reflection. I now invite James and Bill Lau to light the chalice. He wanted me to say his name first. Because I usually say Bill and James.
Yes, you do.
I know. Gautama Dharma is more than just a series of axioms. It is to be lived rather than simply adopted and believed in. It entails that one embraces the world in all its contingency and specificity, with all its ambiguity and flaws. It requires an unflinching honesty with oneself, a willingness to face one's deepest fears and longings, the courage to resist fleeing to the imagined safety of one's temporary place. In the midst of strife and confusion, it invites one to pay precise attention to what is happening, to resist the urge to follow habitual patterns of reactions, to respond from the still and same perspective of one's life founded on practical reason. I now invite you to join me with saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is a doctrine that we share. The quest for truth is a sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, thus do we covenant with one another. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. We invite the children to sit up front for a Time for All Ages presentation before going to their educational classes. The challenge this month is soup.
From you I receive, to you I give. Together we share, and from this we live.
From you I receive, to you I give. Together we share, and from this we live.
I'm going to sit down if everyone's okay with that. My name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UCF. And this morning, I would like to share the story of how the Buddha came to be known as Buddha. So a very long time ago in ancient India, a new baby was born to the royal palace, a boy. You can see up there in that picture. His parents named him Prince Siddhartha Gautama. His parents loved him very much. All his life growing up, his parents gave the prince excellent food to eat, fine clothes to wear, and good servants to wait on him. When he became a man, his parents gave him a different palace for each season of the year. The prince and his wife were blessed with the birth of a baby, a new son, who was strong and healthy. You might say the prince had everything. But when he ventured outside of the palace, all the prince could see was suffering. It bothered him greatly. All his life, the pain and old age and sickness and death, all his life, because all of those things, pain, sickness, and death, were all a part of life. The thought of this had always made him very unhappy. And one day, the prince met a monk. That changed his world. He could not believe that the monk could find happiness in a world that held such misery. So the prince decided to leave and become a monk. The prince traveled ancient India in search of peace and calm in the face of suffering and loneliness. He traveled for 6 years as a monk. He was beginning to despair. Perhaps there was no answer. Perhaps all his life, he would be unhappy. It was a miserable thought. It was when he was resting under a fig tree that the way to end all suffering occurred to him. That was the day the monks called him the Buddha, or the Awakened One. What Buddha had realized, resting under that fig tree, is that life is ruled by four truths. Truths the Buddha called the Four Noble Truths. Those truths are, 1, life is filled with suffering. 2, suffering is caused by people's wants. 3, suffering can be ended if people stop wanting things, like more pleasure or more power. 4, to stop wanting things, people must follow 8 basic laws called the Eightfold Path. So, in the Eightfold Path, you have the laws that all people must follow if they wish end suffering are, 1, to know the truth, 2, to intend to resist evil in your life, 3, to not say anything to hurt others, 4, to respect life, property, and morality, 5, to work at a job that does not injure others, 6, to try to free one's mind from evil, 7, to be in control of one's feelings and thoughts, and 8, to practice appropriate forms of concentration. Buddha realized that people could not follow the rules if the rules were too strict. That's why the Eightfold Path is actually called the middle way. They demand a certain type of behavior, but it is behavior that costs nothing except effort and care. He continued to travel India, telling everyone he met about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. Many people listened. They too had trouble finding happiness in a world full of suffering. Some who listened became monks and helped to spread the word. The rules of the Eightfold Path are simple to list, but are sometimes difficult for people to follow. So to help better understand and remember these rules, Buddhist teachings were written down as proverbs many years ago. And so I'd like to leave everyone on one of these as we leave for class. Hatreds can never cease by hatred in this world. By love alone these cease. This is an ancient law.
Let us take a moment, as we do each and every week, to share what might be happening in our lives, the burdens that are too sorrowful to hold alone, and the joys that are also too great to keep to oneself. So if you do have a brief personal joy or sorrow you would like to share, I invite you to come forward at this time.
Hi, I have a joy to share. About 50 years ago, my sister gave a baby girl up for adoption. And she's recently come back into our lives. And so I have a niece and her family up in Sacramento. And I'm going up next week with my sister, Barbara, to meet her. And we're very excited to extend our family.
My friend David is only 45 years old. He's one of the most vital and happy-go-lucky people I know, and he had a stroke a few days ago, minor stroke, and he just got out of the hospital. The upshot is he's now officially diagnosed as a diabetic. He's on medication and knows how to prevent this from happening again, and he's doing pretty well, but I would still appreciate everyone keeping me in his thoughts, in your thoughts.
A piece that I wrote was chosen for production over at Stages Theater during a Project La Femme show, which is going to be produced on the International Day of Women. So that's exciting. And Jason's going to be in it. Yay! So that's exciting, too. So the International Day of Women is on March 8th, which is a Friday, and it's going to be at 8 p.m., and Stages Theater is in Fullerton. Several of you have already been there. And we'll share more information about that with you as the time comes. Thank you.
Hi, I have two joys. One joy is my daughter, Kimmy, is here visiting today. My second joy is that I belong to this wonderful community that I could bring her to. She's heard all about you guys and all what you've done for me, and I'm so happy that she could be here today.
Hi, I'm Hillary Key, and I have a really fresh sorrow. Just on the way over today, my sister-in-law called me, and I picked up on speaker. I couldn't see who it was. She was crying. Her middle son, my nephew Nick, is all in one piece physically, but he's been overnight in the hospital with some kind of a psychotic break. He was incoherent, and they only found any marijuana trace in his system, nothing else, but he has been self-medicating with substances over the last couple years, and there's just a sense of losing him. And it's really scary when you watch these little guys come up like all these little guys were, and then they grow up and they're out of your control. So she's doing her best to help him. And she asked me to pray for him, so I told her that I would light a candle for him.
Let us hold all these sorrows and these joys in our hearts and minds, knowing, as always, as I always say, there's so much more here in this room that we haven't heard, and so that as we interact, engage with one another, touch each other's lives, let us keep that in mind.
The following is taken from Stephen Batchelor's book, Buddhism Without Beliefs. Some research shows that it originally came from some Tibetan Buddhist traditional stories. One day, an old gentleman was circumambulating the monastery. The teacher said to him, "Sir, I'm happy to see you circumambulating, but wouldn't you rather be practicing the Dharma?" Thinking this over, the old gentleman felt it might be better to read some Buddhist scriptures. While he was reading in the temple courtyard, the teacher said, "I'm happy you're reading the Dharma, but wouldn't you prefer practicing it?" At this, the old gentleman thought that perhaps he should meditate. He sat cross-legged on a cushion, with his eyes half closed. The teacher said again, "I'm so happy to see you meditating, but wouldn't you rather be practicing the Dharma?" Now, totally confused, the old gentleman asked, "Teacher, please tell me what I should do to practice the Dharma." The teacher replied, "When you practice, there's no distinction between the Dharma and your own mind." This reading is enigmatic. It does not answer the question of what is Dharma, or what does one do to practice the Dharma. It does highlight that while working, walking, reading sutras, and meditating are all noble practices, they are not the practice of the Dharma. What is the Dharma, and how does one practice it? Those are questions that one may spend a lifetime asking and never fully answer.
Let us move into a time of meditation, reflection, and prayer. I invite you to concentrate on the sound of the singing bowl. I invite you to feel the waves of sound as they move through the air. Traveling across the space and time of this room, and into our hearts and minds. We invite in loving kindness this morning. We let go of all that distracts us. The conflicts and the tensions and the burdens that we walked into this room with. For a moment, we take a deep breath and breathe out those tensions. Focusing on the sound until it is just our centers and the sound alone. Somewhere at the center of us, there is only loving kindness. Somewhere in the realm of the deepest parts of our hearts and minds, a pure love lives, one that is unsullied by the world, and also one that is nourished by the world. It is this place of loving kindness that we invite in. We invite ourselves to be part of, just as we were one with the sound of the singing bowl. May it be so. Let us now sing in response. Let us be filled with loving kindness.
I live deep in the Bible Belt of southern Tennessee, and am definitely the odd one out. I am a Unitarian Universalist minister and a Buddhist. Most people around here don't know much about either, and those that do are usually surprised to discover strong similarities. UUs have seven guiding principles rather than doctrines or creeds. We believe in the worth and dignity of each person, the right to a free search for truth and meaning, an interconnected web of all existence. And within the universe, Unitarian Universal world, many Buddhists have found a home. I've heard numerous theories as to why this is true, and here is my perspective. I understand enlightenment or awakening from a Soto Zen perspective to be a gradual understanding of our connectedness to everything else. Rather than being something separate and permanent, distinct from the rest of the universe, we learn to see ourselves as transient and truly part of the greater whole. This notion is very similar, if not identical, to the UU seventh principle, respect for the interconnected web of all existence for which we are a part. While this is not the only similarity, I believe it to be one of the most significant. Christianity has a very different view of personhood. People are viewed as eternal beings having a soul that survives physical death. And I understand that I'm making broad generalizations here, and there are certainly exceptions. Often, humans are viewed as having dominion over animals, exploiting them for labor and for food. So people are viewed as masters of their domain, elevated above the rest of creation and eternal in nature. Unitarians and Universalists have grown out of this tradition, but eventually evolved away from it. Some UUs do believe in an afterlife, but few would view humans as exalted above the rest of creation. They would acknowledge the law of cause and effect, or in Buddhist terms, karma. They strive to find truth and meaning, which in my mind is little different from striving for enlightenment or awakening. It's hardly surprising to find that Buddhism and Unitarian Universalism often find a home together, as they have in my life.
I'd love to go to her wedding, my friend Danny said, but it's all the way in Santa Fe. I'm still not sure why I responded without hesitation, but I said, well, let's go. But I did, and so we did. And that weekend all those years ago was memorable indeed, a beautiful wedding in the magical city of Santa Fe. And then we found ourselves late Sunday night, exhausted and bleary-eyed, driving home through the darkness on a seemingly endless stretch of road. Now, at first we were mildly hungry, but as the miles of empty road stretched before us, we became ravenously so. And our eyes were peeled for somewhere to stop, anywhere to stop, but there was nothing for the longest time. Have you had that experience? You're out on there, it's just nothing. And then in the distance, we saw a sign for one of those chain restaurants, a buffet restaurant, one price, all you can eat. Now, neither one of us, it turned out, had been to one of those buffet restaurants for several years, but we each had some vaguely fond and rather hazy memories associated with them from our childhoods. So, of course, we stopped. Now, it wasn't that it was a bad experience, more that it was a big experience. Hungry as we were after hours of driving, we each loaded our plates high with any and everything that looked good. And in a few cases, several things that didn't look necessarily good but were too readily available for our empty stomachs to pass up. So an hour later, we left that buffet sated. More than sated. Stuffed. And frankly, feeling a little queasy. And the hours ahead in the car didn't help that feeling. So without getting into more details than you want to know, let's just say there were a few key stops after that at gas station restrooms of varying levels of cleanliness. Now, this is a cautionary tale above all else. I'm not knocking buffets as a whole. No, I'm knocking the human propensity to gorge without discernment, without thinking about what we are putting in ourselves, where it is from, and how it might rest or not rest alongside whatever else we have ingested. The fact that Unitarian Universalism is considered a multi-faith tradition can make it sometimes feel like a religion that treats other religions like a big buffet that we can just select from. All the world's religious practices just available for us to pick and choose as we want. But when we approach this buffet to fill a ravenous spiritual hunger, we inevitably get into trouble. Buddhism asks of us, in general, to be careful of our potential gluttony of experience, even spiritual experience. The core practice of mindfulness in Buddhism is not yet another dish on a spiritual buffet. It's a way of approaching the buffet. Approaching with care and respect and taking in what resonates without going overboard. Of listening to our inner being. Of clearing away extraneous thoughts. Of leaning into our authentic feelings. Spending too much time at the buffet can be about numbing ourselves to life, to pain, to joy even. Buddhism reminds us to fully accept what comes, and we can't do that if we're frantically stuffing our hearts and minds with anything we can find. After all, life in its way is a road trip, a very long one, and we're going to get hungry along the way. The question is, how do we both meet our needs for nourishment and the obstacles we may encounter along the way? I think finding both nourishment and ways of coping with obstacles is a big part of the larger road trip of human history. For instance, this morning we could talk of Elizabeth Palmer Peabody, 19th century Unitarian who, among other things, began the first kindergarten here in the United States. But what we're interested in is in 1844, she published the first English translation of the Lotus Sutra, a key Buddhist scripture, bringing some of the central concepts of Buddhism to Western eyes for the very first time. But really, skipping forward ahead, it wasn't until much further down the road, in the 60s and 70s, that a widespread academic and exploratory interest began in UU congregations. At that time, 60s and 70s, UUs were particularly suspicious of ritual authority and formal religious practices, and we haven't completely lost that by any means. But folks then saw Buddhism as doctrinal and passive towards justice issues. So it wasn't really till the 1980s that UUs began to see Buddhism differently, began to recognize how diverse it was in its approach to doctrine, and that there was a powerful spiritual foundation available there for the work of social justice. At that time, the Unitarian Universalist Buddhist Fellowship was born, and that's been an influential force for spreading Buddhist thought and practices among UUs. UU Minister Meg Riley is one such person. She writes of the impact Buddhist practices have had on her life, especially in a moment of crisis. I have found that Buddhist concepts, more than any others, offered me comfort in my most despondent times. Sitting by my mother's deathbed, it's not that I sat there as a Buddhist. It's that Buddhist language, metaphor, and understanding offered itself to me like a cozy blanket. Sitting with the fact of impermanence before, during, and after her death was easy and beautiful. I was neither grasping nor despondent. Isn't that what so many of us could wish from this road trip called life? That each thing we encounter on our journey, even the most heinous of obstacles, that we could meet that obstacle with ease and beauty. Now, it's certainly not the Western way. I'm reminded of a funeral I went to many years ago before I was a Unitarian Universalist. The minister offered a few words, very impersonal but quite authoritative. The deceased was now in the hands of God alongside Jesus, so there was no need to have any other doubts or concerns. No need for tears because he is in heaven now. End of story. The family nodded dutifully along as they stood there in the front of the church. But as the ushers tried to close the casket, the dead man's wife threw herself on it, wailing and screaming. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Followed by not one, but two adult daughters. And then the brothers began to yell at them, at the priest, I wasn't sure. And I remember, as all this is going on in the front of the sanctuary, thinking, there has to be a better way. Looking back, I realized the priest's message was one of acceptance. But acceptance solely because of belief in another world, not the one the dead man's family was left in. The family in that moment was left without a place to lean into their own pain. And so it had exploded as surely as a bomb would explode. So Buddhism calls us to open ourselves to our own pain. That's a foreign concept in Western culture, which is so much about evading our emotional pain, doing whatever we can do to numb ourselves. UU Sam Trumbore writes, the Buddha focused like a laser beam on one problem and one problem only, that of human dissatisfaction, suffering, misery, and unhappiness. Unitarian Universalists are keenly interested in this same problem. Unlike other religious traditions, we're not trying to escape this world and get into another one. We want to learn how to live in this world. And I think part of living successfully in this world means accepting that we will all have pain. But it's not that Buddhism asks that we wallow in our pain and grief. Just acknowledge that experiencing it is part of life in all its complexity and even its mystery. UU Judith Wright says of her journey, in my mid-30s, I had a midlife spiritual crisis. I began to question Unitarian Universalism and my own personal spiritual beliefs. Something was missing. I felt a yearning and longing for something beyond a totally scientific, rational approach to religion. And out of left field, I had a number of what I now believe were profound mystical experiences, moments of grace and glimpses of what I now call the holy and the interconnectedness of all. Initially, I was confused by these profound events. I sought out spiritual teachers for the first time in my life. I was exposed to the Buddha's teachings, and they spoke to my heart and spirit. For me, there was and always is mystery. I've come to accept that much in life happens on levels I don't comprehend. My experiences in Buddhism have reinforced this sense of mystery. So that's Judith Wright who says that. So I think it's no wonder, then, that Buddhism has found a home within Unitarian Universalists, for there is I think, much in alignment with contemporary Unitarian Universalism. The willingness to journey honestly through the realities of life's joys and sorrows, the sense of connectedness to a greater whole, and the humbling awareness of what is beyond our comprehending. There was a certainty at times in Unitarian Universalist history that we no longer have, and I think that's a good thing. Uncertainty allows us to keep questioning, to remind us that we don't have all the answers, I know I don't, and to listen when people tell us their truths, especially people from marginalized communities. Part of our embrace of uncertainty has to do with the influence of Buddhism on our community for the last 40 years or so. And Buddhism also has shown we UUs that we have the ability to witness the truths of our existence. It's just that there's a kind of mental fog of greed and hate and ignorance, distractions, all getting in the way. So we need to do two things. One is to act better, to behave more virtuously. And the other is to help clear away the fog using mindfulness practices, meditation, whatever your spiritual practice might be that helps you get rid of all that stuff that's in the way. And by doing that, we become more in touch with our connection to the greater whole. One of the places I've seen that I think tends to be a roadside stop for all of us at one time or another, rarely of our own choosing, is the hospital. When I worked as a chaplain, I would enter room after room, checking in with people, finding out how they were doing. And there was always a patient chart, told me how the person identified religiously, whether it was Lutheran or Methodist, Greek Orthodox, Catholic, or nun. Those were my favorites, usually the nuns. But most of the time, what I discovered was people didn't really want to talk about religion as it was laid out on their chart. Not at least in those conventional terms. They talk about their lives, their friends. Sometimes there were tears, sometimes anger. Sometimes they wouldn't talk to me at all. Sometimes they called me names. But one group was pretty predictable, though I only saw maybe a half dozen or so of them. The ones that marked Buddhist on their chart, they seemed to be at peace in the hospital. Not content, that's way too strong a word, but at peace. There was no talk of why me, a natural question, especially in our culture of shaming and blaming. But instead there was acceptance. Now, like all faith practices, I'm sure even Buddhism's concept of suffering can become shaky for people facing certain obstacles. None of our road trips are fully mapped out. And sometimes what we thought we would need along the way, it's not what we end up needing at all. But what I did see of those people who identified in this way was an understanding that their time in the hospital was part of the whole spectrum of life. You know, we never really know where we'll be traveling to next in life. I'm glad I said yes to that spontaneous trip to Santa Fe all those years ago, because even with that disastrous stop at the buffet, I still have good memories of that trip. And I do try to say yes to life as much as I can. And I try to remind myself that there will be detours and obstacles, highways and byways I never intended upon and probably couldn't even imagine. But I think if I can breathe, pay attention along the way, not just let it all pass by, but if I can accept it as it comes, determine where I have agency and where I don't, and maybe at the end of this thing called life, I'll have a sense that I've lived out my connection to the whole in a way that perhaps has done some good. I suspect that's what most of us really want at the end of the day. The Buddha, quite wisely, remained mostly silent on divinity, immortality, and ultimate reality. So I will too this morning, because the truth is I don't know. Certainly don't know better than the Buddha. I don't know where we go when we die, or if the world we're in is it. But I do know that life will happen, is happening for each of us. That we will celebrate, and we will suffer. That we will have the opportunity to stuff ourselves beyond reckoning, or pay attention to what we take in and what we don't. That we have the choice to travel through life in a way that offers clarity to our minds by the unified motivation of our actions toward good. This is our journey, our collective road trip. I hope the car is big enough for all of us. And the road reaches into the distance, heading off into the horizon, ending nowhere that we can see, and yet always beginning. Always beginning.
That was a beautiful sermon. I just want to say one thing. I was in a rear-end accident on Monday night, coming back from visiting my mom. And I've been taking meditation classes. And it was very scary. I'm okay. As I got off the freeway and took the exit off the road, it's dark, I'm by myself, and I could barely move afterwards. And I could roll down the window, and the young man comes out and says, "Are you okay?" And I said to him, "Thanks for not hitting me." And he said, "I hit you." And I said, "Thanks for not hitting me so hard." And he looked so baffled, and he said, "You're welcome." Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude to the community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity. Thank you.